Friends, welcome. We are thinking about sexual union and marriage and how those things point us to the gospel story of Jesus, to God's grace and faithfulness, his covenant keeping and his unconditional love for us. And so it's important that we recognize the biblical and theological rationale for this connection between sexual union and marriage and really see the riches and the depth of that. Because oftentimes the rhetoric and what people are oftentimes taught in church is just don't have sex till marriage, don't have sex till marriage, without ever really understanding why. How do we understand this in a positive way, not just kind of reacting against maybe what's going on in the broader culture? And so it's really important, I think, that we are able to articulate that biblical and theological rationale for the connection between marriage and sexual union. So we've been talking about the biblical and theological rationale for understanding the connection between sexual union and marriage, but it's also important that we have a good practical theology as well. And part of what we've been doing as we've walked through the biblical narrative is recognizing these dimensions of creation, of fall, and of redemption. And part of what that helps us see is that God created our bodies good. God created sex good, but we're also affected by sin and the fall. And so we are all sexual sinners. There's a dimension of sexual brokenness and sin that we all carry with us. And that as we recognize then God's intentions for marriage and understand the redemptive work of Jesus and walk in newness of life empowered by the Holy Spirit, it will oftentimes be complicated. It will not be easy. And so we have to be careful that as we're thinking about this pastorally, as we're thinking about both in our own lives and for those folks that we're ministering to, that we're connecting to realize that it can be complicated. And so I want to just briefly highlight a few myths about sex that I think we would do well to avoid, because these kind of myths can be perpetuated out there, maybe especially in the Christian subculture. And so we have to be careful that we don't perpetuate these myths in a way that ends up actually being unhelpful to people's actual marriages and sex lives. And so the first myth that I want to mention here is that if you save sex for marriage, it will be amazing and awesome. I grew up, especially in the 90s, hearing the language of a lot of purity culture, which said, save yourself for marriage, use that language of purity, stay pure for your spouse, and if you do, it's just going to always be amazing and awesome. Now, interestingly, this is almost a kind of health and wealth prosperity gospel aimed at our sexuality. Now, the truth is, sex in marriage may be, for some people, very good. It might come easily and be amazing and awesome. But for others, it might be difficult, whether because of physical or mental or emotional or spiritual struggles, it might be difficult. So we have to be clear here, talking about God's intentions for marriage and understanding the meaning of sexual union and how that fits within marriage. This is not a promise that everything is going to go smoothly or that it will be easier, that your marriage will never have any struggles in these areas. So we have to be careful that we don't perpetuate this myth that, if you just follow the rules, everything is going to be great. That's a myth. A second myth that we have to avoid, I think, is that the best thing about marriage is sex. And this, I'm thinking especially, with these messages, kind of the messages that we aim maybe at youth or young people, that for some at least, especially if you say save sex for marriage, they come to think about marriage as primarily being, well, why would you get married? You would get married for sex. And that, I think, is ultimately a danger, something that diminishes marriage, something that doesn't help people recognize the holistic nature of marriage, the way that it does encompass both our body and soul, that it involves all of who we are. And again, it also sets up people to be severely disappointed if things aren't 100% perfect in their relationship, if things aren't 100% perfect in their sexual relationship. And so we have to be careful here that we don't sort of oversell what we're talking about when we think about the goodness of sex and how that's connected to marriage. A third myth is that good sex just happens naturally. It doesn't take any work or talk or intentionality. This is, again, everybody brings their past. They bring their experiences to this. And so when we think about good sex within marriage, it takes communication. It takes talking with your partner. It takes understanding who they are. It includes understanding, again, how comfortable they are with certain things, what's going to shape how they function in that way is more than just get into bed and things are going to work themselves out. And so I have to really be open and vulnerable to communicate with my spouse, to recognize that it might take work, that it might take intentionality, that this is not something that's just automatic. It's not just natural in the sense that I am immediately in tune with my spouse and understand their needs and desires. And so I have to go into marriage being willing to talk, being willing to be intentional about caring for my spouse sexually. And so I think this is something that oftentimes maybe we don't do enough of in premarital counseling and things of that nature, helping people to understand the level of openness that they'll need and to recognize that it will take work, that it's something that you're going to grow in your marriage, in your understanding of your spouse. And so it's something where you would expect that there would be growth and progress, not something where you are married and now everything just flows naturally. You don't have to talk about it, think about it, whatever. And so I think it's important to help people, to coach people, to expect that this is normal so that they don't get married, so that they don't begin this sexual relationship with their spouse and think, wow, we're really strange because we're maybe not always connecting, or my partner doesn't always know, my spouse doesn't know what I need or what I want. Help people understand that it's a process, that there's growth that happens there. A fourth myth is that everyone has the same assumptions and experiences. Again, this one's closely related to the previous one in that that if we don't actually verbalize, if we don't actually take the time to talk about what are my expectations, what are my assumptions, what are my experiences, what you find in marriage on a whole host of things is that you and your spouse, when you begin this life together, you're living together, you're with each other all the time, you start to realize that you have very different assumptions, very different expectations around all kinds of things, whether that's who buys the food, who cooks the food, who does the laundry, who does some of the house cleaning, who does lawn maintenance, who, right, you could go down, what are you going to do with your free time, how are you going to spend your money? You start to realize that spouses oftentimes come with very different assumptions based on very different experiences. And part of what I'm saying here is that people's experiences and assumptions about sex is no different. And so we have to realize that this is the case so that we can actually share those and process that together and think about how to truly love and care for and serve my spouse in this way and not necessarily not try to change them or force them to be exactly identical to me, but to begin to understand together how you can love and care for each other in that way. The last myth I want to mention here is that sex is just about what happens in the bedroom. If we see and understand that marriage and sexual union is a joining of two persons, of two lives, then it's not just this physical act that you're concerned with, and that maybe we're thinking about how are we performing in bed, how are we taking care of each other in that way sexually. You start to realize that the more that I love and serve and care for my spouse as a whole, in a lot of ways, the easier it makes things in the bedroom. That if they understand that I love them, that I trust them, that I put their needs before my own, that I'm there to really care about them in a broad sense, then it makes openness, vulnerability, in the bedroom that much easier. Similarly, I think, you know, it's also important to recognize that if we understand sexual union as this body language, that there may be times when I'm feeling distant from my spouse, and maybe part of what we need is the actual physical intimacy to remind us that we love each other, that we care for each other. And so, you know, I think we have to recognize that there's kind of a feedback loop here, that as I care for my spouse as a whole, it makes in some ways matters in the bedroom easier. But there's also the sense in which if things are a struggle, maybe on the whole, it's actually important to remind ourselves in the bedroom to consummate our marriage again in sexual union, to say, yes, I freely, totally, faithfully, fruitfully give myself to you, so that physical intimacy can then overflow into greater intimacy, greater connection in the rest of our marriage. And so we have to be really careful here that we don't allow a cutoff either direction, so that we would sort of cut off sex because we're struggling maybe in the broader realm of our relationship, but also realize that as things are going well in the broader relationship as a whole, then that's going to feed well into our sexual relationship. Well, Janelle Williams Paris is an anthropologist, and in her book, The End of Sexual Identity, I really love what she says here about really breaking down some of the myths our culture has about sex, maybe even some Christians. She says this: if marriage or marital sex is asked to deliver self-actualization or good sex on tap, it's likely to disappoint, but it can excel at what it's designed for, drawing people more and more deeply toward love. Practicing sex over and over in the course of a marriage makes plain that sexual intimacy is not an opportunity to get, have, or do a person or an experience. Instead, it's the opportunity to give and receive love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. The fruit of the Spirit ripens in the body. And I love this quote because, again, it shows how sexual union and how marriage are actually called to draw us out of ourselves, that they call us to enter into this way of life that is overflowing with the Spirit of Jesus, that as I give myself totally, fruitfully, freely, faithfully to my spouse, God is at work, that my marriage begins in this small but significant way to serve as a sign and pointer to those who don't know Jesus about God's faithfulness, about God's love, about God's covenant and His character. And so it's not just a matter of following the rules. It's not just a matter of romantic love. It's not just a matter of finding a person who's going to fulfill or complete me. Marriage and sexual union are about putting on display God's love in Christ. That's powerful. That to me is much more of a motivator than any of those other things, than following rules or even finding self-fulfillment. It puts my story in the broader context of God's story and what God is doing. And that gives me purpose. That gives me meaning. That helps me understand my marriage is not just for myself. It's not just for my spouse. It's for those who need to know, who need to see the story of Jesus put on display. Well, marriage is crucial, but maybe you're watching this thinking, I'm single. What about singleness? This seems like marriage is the be-all and end-all. You know, you said at the beginning, don't idolize marriage, but it almost, is that what you're doing in this? I hope not. In the next unit, we're going to shift our attention to singleness, to celibacy, and to see how singleness, just like marriage, is a way that we are called as Christians to put Jesus' love on display. And so until next time, blessings.